It's Palmer. His name is Bernie, and it's another beautiful day in paradise. Great. Welcome here, Bernie.
Thank you, Red. I really find this to be a privilege, and looking forward to it.
Okay. Is he close enough to that mic? Does it sound good? Yeah, okay, good. You're good. Okay, so, Bernie, you had, you know, you're in recovery, and that's what we're here to talk about today, because I know that the sheriff, Sheriff Lohr, who's no longer the sheriff now, but he's now a, you know, county commissioner. But he said when he was sheriff, he said they have probably three overdoses every month, you know. And a lot of people die in little old Vero Beach, Indian River County. You live down in which county?
I live in St. Lucie County, Fort Pierce.
Great. And how long have you been sober?
7.5 years since May 12th, 2016.
Now, so did you drink your whole life? Were you addicted? Or
I drank from 18 to age 70, but about until I was in my early 50s, I drank normally, like non-alcoholic, not as an active alcoholic.
That was not funny. That's the same with me. I didn't drink at all until I was like in my early 50s.
That's when things went downhill for me in a hurry.
Now, what caused that? Was there some trauma that happened, a divorce, a death, or anything like that?
Nothing, Rhett. I had a really good life. I grew up in Connecticut, middle class, great parents. I had a great education, great job.
What'd you do for a living?
I was, well, most of my adult life, I was a psychiatric nurse.
Really? Now, yeah. What does that mean?
That means
what does a psychiatric nurse do?
Well, they can work in hospitals. I work part of my time in hospitals.
Does that mean you're working with nutty people or people that are
people with mental illness and also people with substance abuse? Most people that I found that are people that are dealing with a substance abuse problem, an addiction, also have some type of history of mental illness. I did myself. I was treated for years before I became an active alcoholic, where I started drinking every day and dangerously and destructively.
What were you treated for, though?
I was treated for chronic depression and anxiety disorder, and I still have anxiety disorder today, much more mild than
I
did.
No, I've never heard of that. What does that mean? Like when people have, what do you call those, panic attacks? Is that what it is?
Panic attacks, that's the ultimate. More anxiety attacks, feeling uncomfortable, feeling anxious, feeling not right. It's a wide range.
What caused that? Do you have any ideas of what causes that?
No.
Was there a trauma in your life as a kid or something?
Well, the only trauma I had in my life, and it may have something to do with it, is my father dropped dead in front of me when I was 11 years old of a heart attack in a barbershop in Connecticut, and left my mother with four kids, all young. And,
were you the eldest?
No, my sister was 15. I was 11 at the time. I had a brother that was 10 and a brother that was 9. Thank God my mother was a beautiful, loving, caring woman and always gave us the love we needed. We were never at a loss for anything.
How old was your dad when he died?
42.
Okay, actually, what you were going to say?
Excuse me?
You were going to say actually what about your mom?
I can't remember what I was going to say, but I was going to say, like I said, my mother was loving, caring. We were never without anything, and the only thing I could what I was going to say is after my father died, I was 11 years old, and the thought, and people put it in my mind, friends of mine and stuff like that, well, if your mother dies, you're going to be an orphan. So I think that did have something to do with anxiety in my life, and started as an 11-year-old, and I never really got rid of it. And I'm 77 today, and I still have anxiety. And I honestly think people say to me, you know, why did you start drinking alcoholically?
In your 50s.
In my 50s. And there's no genetics in my family. A lot of people say that alcoholism is a genetic disease. It runs in the family.
But nobody else has it in your family?
No one in my family except an aunt on my mother's side. No, my grandparents, my parents.
Well, you drank, though, to quell the fear.
Well, that's why so many people drink. They drink to cover or mask or lessen some kind of pain in their lives.
And the bad news is then they stuff that stuff down for years. It stops the growth. Like you do, you've known people who have been drinking since they were a kid. When they finally get sober, they have the maturity of a 19-year-old, even though they're 60.
That is something that you hear all the time, that a 50-year-old who has been drinking since they're 15 or 14 or 18 or 20.
One thing that occupies too much, even doctors, they'll get a doctor. You know what the average, a doctor told me this, a neurosurgeon. My friend was studying to be a neurosurgeon. After 32 years, you're 32 years of age, you've been going to school all these years. Their social skills are that of an 18-year-old, they said, when they graduate.
Well, that's what they...
That's 24 years... That's 10, 11, 12, 14 years behind others.
That's what they say. Wherever you started drinking abnormally...
you shut yourself down.
That's where your growth starts as far as your emotional growth and your social growth.
Okay, I want to know, how bad did it get?
With me?
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. I told you I had a beautiful life. In Connecticut.
Married, kids?
Married to a beautiful woman, two kids who today they're both psychiatric nurses.
How do you like that?
And they're very, very productive, kind, loving, caring. My wife is, my kids are. And I lived in a beautiful neighborhood in Connecticut, nice house. I had a great job, as I said. You know, financially we were secure. There was loving, caring. And once the alcohol took over my life at my early 50s, that quickly went downhill. I lost my health. I lost my financial stability. I lost my retirement dreams for my wife and myself because of my drinking and the expenses and the damage it did, and I lost my family at age, 10 years ago, my family sat down with me, and after 15 years of this stranger in the house, this alcoholic stranger in the house that they didn't know who it was or what it was, I wasn't the person that I was.
Were you an angry drunk or a tearful drunk?
I was not an angry drunk. I never laid a hand on my family. I was one of two kinds of drunk. You can have the angry, violent drunk. Okay, I wasn't that. I never was in my whole life. I don't think I've been in a angry fight in my entire 77, almost 78 years. The way alcohol affected me was one of two ways. When I came home from work, and I went to work as a nurse every day. I can't ever remember seeing a patient under the influence of alcohol. I would drink after work. But when I came home, and I tell people this, I was either what a lot of alcoholics do, an isolationist, where I isolated from my family. I'd walk in the door after work. I'd walk right by everybody, and I'd go up to my separate room and close the door, and that would be it for the night. Or I would come in if I had a bad day at work or if whatever the case may be, whatever set me off, I would come in and I would be verbally and psychologically abusive to my family. And after 15, 17 years of this, they sat me down one day and said, you either stop drinking or you're not welcome in this home anymore. What I did was I grabbed my bottle of cheap vodka. This is the addictive behavior where you can't stop your bad behavior because the alcohol has taken over your body, your brain, your psyche. I grabbed a bottle of vodka. 2 weeks later, I was on a plane in New York heading to West Palm to come down to Florida.
Mm.
And I left this unbelievably beautiful family behind who I loved dearly. But the power of the alcohol for an alcoholic was more powerful than my love for my family.
Have you reconciled?
Oh, yes, I have.
I'm not back down here?
No, my family's all in Connecticut.
Where in Connecticut?
They're in New Haven County,
Okay, because my nephew lives near Milford.
That's where I grew up, in Milford.
Ah.
Yeah, I grew up in Milford.
You know that famous ice cream place? It's on a street. Now they have a place there where they have horses and stuff. It's another section of town near. It's right near Milford.
I'm trying to think. There,
a famous ice cream place at a farm there.
It doesn't strike a bell to me. No. But bottom line,
nice area.
Yes, it is.
Connecticut is beautiful.
Connecticut's a beautiful town
and
beautiful city. Well, like I said,
do you go up and visit now?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So okay, so you start drinking. It gets really bad. You come down here, and how bad did it get before you found recovery?
Let's put it this way.
Were you living on the streets? Sleeping
No. I was living in my brother's condo over on South Hutchinson Island. Beautiful condo overlooking the ocean. And all I did was drink 24 hours a day. And what happened was I was down here 3 years after leaving Connecticut. I was down here 3 years drinking 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And on May 11th, 2016, I had no intention of stopping drinking. I had told people I was going to drink until I died. Usually people go one of two roads with their alcoholism.
Yeah.
One is they will decide, I can't stand this anymore and I have to do something about it, and they'll go seek help.
Yeah.
The other one is the person who says, I'm going to drink until I die. I know I'm destroying myself, and I don't care. I chose that second road. And on May 11, 2016, I left a bar on South Hutchinson Island, Archie's, that is very famous.
Remember Archie's.
Yep. I went
a lot of motorcycles there.
Motorcycles. There used to be not as many now, but I left there with no intention of stopping drinking. It was a Wednesday night. May 11, 2016, it was karaoke night, and ironically, the song that I sang last before I left was My Way. And a half an hour later, My Way of 52 years of drinking got me face down, totally paralyzed, near death from alcoholic poisoning in my brother's parking lot.
You couldn't even move?
I was totally paralyzed.
Why did you want to drink so much when you had a nice family life, though? Do we know? I mean,
that's the power of alcohol.
It's like a
devil. Power of alcohol. There's two things they say, and this is important for people listening who think they might have a problem with drinking. They say that there's two things with an alcoholic.
Yeah.
That they say, you know, you're an alcoholic if one. When you start drinking, you never know if you're going to stop at one, or if you're going to drink until you're passed out and in a hospital or whatever. The second one is, if you do stop, can you stay stopped? And alcoholics, if they stop for any length of time, they will start again. They can't stay stopped when they try to stop.
You stayed stopped. How'd you do it?
Well, here's the whole thing. The thing that there is part of our literature that says that no human power can relieve you of your alcoholism. The second part of that is, and I don't want to offend anyone when I use this, and I will explain it why. The second part of that is, God could and would if he were sought. That history has shown, with alcoholics and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you have to have, for long-term and happy recovery, you have to have, maybe not right in the beginning, but eventually, some type of, and they use the word God because it's easy, but not the God necessarily that people think of, the, you know, the Catholic God or the Christian God or whatever the case may be, or Allah or Buddha or whatever the case may be. It's just a power greater than human, that's greater than yourself, that can decide. I always believe that whatever power there is up there that's greater than me is a kind, loving, caring power. And every single creature, living creature on the face of the earth, is one of that power's children, okay? And it's just like any parent. They want the best for their children. Most parents want the best for their children. And I find that the higher power that I have, who happens to be Jesus, but that's just me. Other people have, I have friends that their higher power is the, you know, nature or the ocean or
group of drunks, God, G-O-D, group of drunks.
A group of drunks, God, but that'll work in the beginning, but a group of drunks are people.
Yeah.
Okay? A group of drunks are people.
Yeah.
And people can help you get sober, and maybe in the beginning keep you sober, but over the long
run,
you
need a higher power.
You need a power that's greater than yourself, whatever, and we say the power of greater is a conception that you can understand and accept. It doesn't have to be the formal, usual, you know.
Now, I happen to believe it's Jesus, too, but he can certainly make his way and introduce himself along the way if somebody has a higher power, when and if he wants, you know, because people get scared. I remember it was very freeing, actually, because I had a radical born-again experience when I was 29. So I felt compelled to proselytize where I would go. I wanted to tell you about Jesus because I wanted you people to have what I had, too. What was great about going to the rooms is that you don't do that. No one's allowed to. You're free. You're free not to do that, and you're also free. You don't have to do it. In other words, it was really nice to be in a room if you're a Buddhist or you're a believer, or what's it called, a Mohammedist, what are they called?
Islam.
Islam. If you're Israeli, if you're Jew, if you're Christian, a Catholic, whatever, Protestant. I mean, it doesn't really matter, or, you know, you're an atheist or agnostic. It's not my business. It's our business just to keep our side of the street clean.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because there's a very control. People like want to control. Well, I got to do this now. You got to come in wearing a blue sweater. If you don't wear a blue sweater, you're not going to go to heaven like me. Go away. You know what I mean?
I just try to be.
But what?
Go ahead.
No, I want to know. So that's how you know you're in a parking lot. You've fallen down from alcohol poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even move. You're paralyzed.
I'm paralyzed.
Now, I had a friend recently just got out of a hospital. I mean, he was near death. He couldn't even stand up on his feet. He locked himself in his house. He'd been in the program for 30 years. Locked himself in the house and drank for a month and a half. He finally called the ambulance, and they brought him in. He's back to work and everything now, but he couldn't even walk. I'd never heard of this before, and then with you said you were paralyzed.
Oh, yeah.
So they had to put you on a stretcher?
Yeah, I was.
And where'd they bring you?
Indian River Medical Center.
What happened there?
Intensive care detox. They kept me alive.
Oh, they have an intensive care detox over here?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
That's where I was, on 37th Street.
Really?
Yeah. And they have intensive care detox.
Yeah.
And they did whatever they had to do with the medications, the, you know, whatever. I was basically could not move. They used whatever means they used, like I said, medications, I think oxygen in the beginning. I'm not sure.
How about your brain? How was it working?
My brain wasn't working.
How about your liver?
My liver was basically shot. And
now, the liver can renew itself if it's
liver's
given a chance.
The only organ in the body.
No, they found out the brain can, too.
The only organ in the body that can renew itself is the liver.
Yeah.
That's the only one.
Yeah.
And my liver is totally healthy today.
Isn't that amazing?
7.5 years later.
So the good Lord rebuilt your liver.
I have, well, yeah, I guess so, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
All I know is that after 7.5 years, this is like a really important part of my story. Laying in that hospital bed in Indian River Medical Center in an alcoholic semi-coma, a total peace came over me. Total peace. After drinking for 52 years, being anxiety-ridden neurotic for most of those years with depression, a total peace came over me. The desire and the obsession to drink alcohol was lifted.
No.
And the alcoholic demons that tortured me and my family for many, many years left my body.
How do you know? What did that feel like? Were you reading the Bible at the time?
No,
was somebody
nothing.
Praying with you?
Nothing.
Just you're laying in the bed and all of a sudden this happens?
Laying in the bed and this peace. It's there wasn't a white light or burning bush or some, you know, you hear stuff like that.
But this peace comes over you.
A total peace came over me, and I knew somehow that the obsession, I was never going to have to fight my alcoholic
demons. Now, what about
demons
these demons?
Again.
Did you feel them leave, or?
I felt the total peace. I just felt like I wasn't going to have to fight my disease of alcoholism and all the tortures that go along with it.
Wow. Have you ever had a desire since?
No. In 7.5 years, I have never had a real desire to
drink.
Now,
there are people
again.
Like you, I hear. I know my friend Reverend Bill had that experience. He's no longer on the earth now, but he said he was instantaneously delivered. But he never went to AA meetings, you know, not as a regular thing. Why do you attend AA meetings regularly? Has it helped you with your personality, you know?
People ask that question a lot, Rhett. And the question, I mean, everyone goes to meetings for different purposes. Some go.
Fellowship.
Fellowship or... is one of them. I go to meetings because I like to. I feel good when I go there. Mm-hmm. I've been sober for 7.5 years now, and I have gone to, except for when I've been in the hospital or even when I go to Connecticut to see my family, I go to meetings up there. I've been to probably over 4,000 meetings in 7.5 years. Mm-hmm. I go to a meeting still today, 7.5 years later, almost every single day, sometimes two a day. Yeah. And I don't go because I feel like if I don't go, I'm going to start drinking again.
No.
I'm past that. What I will say is when I go to meetings, I feel good. There's a fellowship there that's strong, that helps with my sobriety. And the thing is, one of two things can happen when I'm in a meeting. I can hear something from someone else that shares their story, because mm-hmm. we all have individual stories. Every alcoholic has an individual story. Okay.
Yeah, just like a thumbprint.
We have some similarities. There's a lot of similarities, but each person has their own story. And that's another point I want to make today. Whatever I say here today, if someone hears it, I'm telling you my story. I'm not telling you your story or a friend's story or a neighbor's story or someone I don't work anymore, but I'm telling my story and what's worked for me and what didn't work for me. That's the important thing. We're all individuals, even though we all have some similarities, alcoholics. Like I said, I feel when people are in the throes of active alcoholism, there's a couple things that I say we all have. One, we are insane. The behavior that we exhibit is insanity for normal people. The second thing is we are self-destructive. And if we are not stopped, we will somehow die from our disease, from liver problems, from heart problems, from kidney problems, from suicides, from automobile accidents, drinking drunk, mm-hmm. From falling, from just crazy behavior. And I say that, and like I said, the other thing that I want to stress, if someone says to me, am I an alcoholic? The only thing I can say to them is you're the only one that can decide that. I can tell you what happened to me, and I can also tell you the two signs of a true alcoholic, which I mentioned before. One is if you are drinking and you cannot control the amount you drink.
Yeah.
When you start drinking, you don't know if you're going to end up, you know, 5 days later in some other town.
Mm. Going, how did I get here?
How did I get
they
here?
They call that a blackout.
Well, I never blacked out once in my 52 years of drinking. Some people black out. A lot of people black out. So, one, can you control the amount that you drink? Once you put a first drink in your body, can you control the amount? Say, I'm going to have two beers and have two beers and go home.
Now, I haven't had a drink in 14 years, except at a church with a little bit of the wine, Catholic Church, or whatever it was, St. Anne's. But I can't keep ice cream in the house. If there's ice cream,
well,
2 o'clock in the morning, okay. You know.
People think of addictions as like alcohol or drugs. There are, You know, and they say Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous or Cocaine's Anonymous or Overeaters Anonymous or Gamblers Anonymous. There are in this country, there are, I've been told now, 160 or so organizations that are some type of anonymous for people that have an addiction that may be overeating. Some people, ice cream. Going to the gym in a unhealthy way. But like I said, the one I'm talking about today is the only one I really know is the alcoholism. And again, let me go back because I go off on tangents. That's one of my problems. I also talk too much. But besides that, the two things, you are an alcoholic if, one, when you put the first drink in your mouth, you cannot stop the amount, or you have no control over the amount you are going to drink that day. Mm. And the second one is if you do decide to stop, mm-hmm. and you do stop, you can't stay stopped. Mm. You will go back to drinking. Those are the two signs of someone who is a true alcoholic. Those are the parameters that we use.
Now, the thing is, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want help to stop, then you can call your local. That's what this ad right here says. If you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, locally, you can go to AA. Anywhere in the world, you can go to AA.org. Here, you can go 772-562-1114. If you want to, you can certainly go to verosvoice.com. You'll see the magazine there. You can read it for free. There's no charge. And you'll find that at the back of the magazine. But you can always call AA and W. What I want to know is that an amazing thing happens is that this caring for one another, mm-hmm. complete and utter strangers.
Yep.
There's no selling that goes in with AA. You're not there. You don't try to sell. If you're in the tire business, you're not going to go around the room system trying to sell your tires. You know, I'm not going to, you know, promote my radio show or my magazine, whatever they're doing, you know. I have had, of course, doctors in there. I've had judges, surgeons, police officers. I have movie stars. I've had at least two movie stars that I've met. But we seem to care about the complete stranger. You know, there's a saying, let us love you until you can love yourself again.
The thing of it is, what you just said is so on target, Rhett. The purpose we have found. People say, "What's your purpose in life when you're in Alcoholics Anonymous? When you're a recovered alcoholic?
Yes.
What is your purpose?
Yeah.
The single most important purpose is to help. And I said it before.
Yes, you have.
Is to help another one of God's creatures. And it doesn't have to be another alcoholic. It doesn't have to be another type of drug addict. It can be any one of God's creatures on the face of the earth. When I walk, I say a prayer in the morning that kind of reinforces that. And that prayer, it's my own prayer that I've come up with over 7.5 years.
What is that?
And the prayer is, "Dear Lord, I pray that you put as many of your children in my path today as you think I may be able to help, even if I am never aware of it, and bless me with whatever gifts I need to accomplish that." If you, and I tell this at meetings all the time, because some people think that our purpose is to help another alcoholic. It is.
Yeah.
Because another alcoholic is a human being who has a problem. Okay.
But whether you're feeding the hungry or clothing the naked or visiting people in prison or whatever you're doing.
Absolutely.
Do something for somebody else.
That is our purpose.
I call it dignity. In other words, respect you have to earn. You have to earn my respect. Your dignity, you don't have to earn. In other words, like I saw this lady walking down the street a couple of years ago and she didn't smile at me. And I thought, I wonder why she didn't smile. Because she didn't think. She didn't have enough self-worth, self-dignity to realize she had something to give. It doesn't matter about your wallet or your pocketbook. You can be a billionaire. You can be totally penniless. You still have power. Everybody wants power. They want power with politicians. They want, I know a politician. So I've got power because I donated to its candidacy. Or I am a politician. I've got power. Or everybody wants power, power, power. I want lots of money so I can have power. No, you don't need anything. You have the power to look somebody in the eye. And, you know, I might be walking down the street, and you might say, hey, that's Rhett. That's Rhett Palmer. But you smile at me. You don't know what I'm going through. I know of a friend of mine who said his friend told him this year, this guy was on his way to commit suicide. He said, unless somebody talks to me, I'm going to go to the Green Island Bridge in Troy, New York. And I used to live up there, and I remember specifically there was a lawyer who put a bunch of rocks in his pockets, jumped off the bridge, and killed himself. Well, anyway, this guy was on his way. Nobody spoke to him. He gets to the bridge. All of a sudden, an old man walks by and starts a conversation. How are you? The guy didn't commit suicide. He's alive today.
That's all it takes. You know what it is?
Validation. What?
Kindness.
And kindness, dignity.
And kindness and caring.
Dignity. I hold the door open for you. When I do that, and I dignify you, whether you like it or not, doesn't matter. I've dignified myself. And I don't need you to say thank you. I've already dignified myself. The God above can see what you've done. And, you know.
This is what I say, Rhett. This is what I say. When I walk out the door in the morning after saying my prayers, and that one I just told you was one of them.
Yeah. And okay. Say that prayer again. I want people to hear
okay.
it.
Okay. The prayer that I say, and it's an individual one. It's not in any book. I came up with
it
after 7.5 years.
I like it.
And that's because my major purpose as a human being, not even someone who's in Alcoholics Anonymous, any human being can live by this. And I say, Dear Lord, I pray that you put as many of your children in my path today as you think I may be able to help in any way, even if I'm never aware of it, and bless me with whatever gifts I need to accomplish that. What you just said about the man on the bridge, okay? I think if I in the parking lot, you know what I do now in parking lots? And I do this all the time, and it's for me too.
Yeah.
If I'm walking by a person and I can make eye contact with them, so often I'll just smile at them and say, hi, how's your day?
Yeah.
And you know what? 9 times out of 10, I'll get a smile back.
Sure you will.
And you know what else? If something like that happens, I'm not an apostle. I'm not a really religious guy. I have a spirituality that this program has brought to me, a spirituality which is that belief in a higher power than me that's kind, loving, and caring.
But it made you a better person.
Made me a much better person. It made me a person that has peace in his life today. That is so important.
Mm.
On that hospital bed, that peace came over me. That peace has been with me. I can't describe it.
Wow.
It was a higher power saying,
For you, it's Jesus.
For me, it's Jesus.
As it is for me, too.
For me, it's Jesus. But like I said, I have friends who, like I said, it's the
win. In other words, it doesn't matter. You're going to love somebody, whatever they are. And that's the way I feel. Don't be religious. Love everybody. Let God sort it all out.
Absolutely. Like I said.
Keep your side of the street clean.
Keep your side.
And that's all you're obligated. You know what happened in New York City recently? This guy was walking in the door with another guy. So this other guy holds the door open for the guy. He pulled up on his motorcycle or whatever, the other guy. And he holds the door open for the motorcyclist. And the motorcyclist doesn't say anything. He says, hey, you know, to the other guy, says, you know, you could have thanked me. And he goes, you know, and the other guy just doesn't say anything. Maybe he doesn't like to talk. You know, you could have thanked me. You should have thanked me because I did that for that. And the guy turns to him and says, well, I didn't ask you to hold the door open for me. You know? See, he was expecting something. So anyway, the guy in the motorcycle ends up just leaving, and the guy follows him out into the parking lot. And he's saying, you should thank me. The guy finally takes out a knife into the guy's heart, kills the guy that held the door open, and he drove off. Okay. I don't know if they found him or whatever, probably. But the point is, you don't give to get. Don't expect something back. Hold the door open, and if they don't appreciate it, it doesn't matter. The universe, God, has seen you do it. You get your reward. Even if it's just this, I treat you nice. What I've done, if I dignify you, I dignify myself.
Without a doubt. As they say, one of the sayings, and this, again, not only goes for Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholics or other addicts, it's in giving that we receive. It's in giving that we receive.
Yeah, it's not wild.
And here's a saying also that I love to say, and it's in the program. You hear it in the program, in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, is the greatest thing you can do is, the greatest gift you can do is do something kind for someone else and never let anyone else other than you and that other person know it happened. You're not going to go, after you do something nice for someone, you're not going to go to a meeting and say, oh, I helped this guy today by doing, no, the greatest way to give is to give without anyone else knowing except you and the person.
Now, there's the other side, and my sponsor and friend, I had somebody that was waiting for me, you know, at certain meetings and saying, you know, waiting for a $20 bill. I started giving $20. He's there all the time. So my sponsor says, oh, no. What you do is you hand him a $20 bill the first time, say, but this is the only time, you know. Even the guy in Shark Tank said, your family member comes to him for $160,000. They want to start a restaurant. He said, that guy owes me and the family owes me $160,000. It's not going to be a very happy Thanksgiving. He says, nope, here you go. Just writes out a check. He gives him $50,000. He says, I'm going to give you $50,000. Just give it to you. I don't want you to repay me. You never repay me. But that's done. It's the one and only time I'm going to give you money. Don't ever ask again because the answer is no. Here's $50,000. Just do it, you know. I want to be able to have a nice Thanksgiving, Christmas when all the family's together. I don't want to have to think about it. And, you know, it's just give it and that's it. But my sponsor said, give the $20, but just tell them this is the only time, you know. And another lesson I learned was I kept hiring people for the first 5 years that only had a little bit of time. And I ended up, somebody has to be in the program at least 5 years before I'll hire them. They got to have some sobriety, you know. But Bernie, great to meet you.
Well, it was great to be able to. There's going to be so much I know that when I leave here, I'm going to say, damn, why didn't?
Well, you know what? Well, no. Take mental notes. Think about it. If you want, you can come back in the future. We'll do another one.
You know what? I'd love to do that because one thought I want to give to anyone out there who has who's not living happily and feels that maybe it's because of, I can just talk about substances, my alcoholism, okay? But I was hopeless. I made the decision I was going to die from my drinking, okay? I drank for 52 years, couldn't stop. I lost my family because of it. I lost my health. I lost my financial future. I didn't lose my job because I didn't lose my job because my people that I worked with, I at psychiatric nurse as a visiting nurse, I was 66 years old, and it was time to retire. And they basically took me into HR, human resources, and said, Bernie, because they kind of started to have a feeling that I had a problem, okay?
And they said what?
And they basically said to me, Bernie, you're 66 years old. You've been an employee here for almost 20 years, and you've done a wonderful job. And now it's time for you to go enjoy life and retire. Instead of saying to me, Bernie, if you don't retire, you know—
Now, so what percentage of your pay did you end up getting the rest of your life?
Whatever the normal,
was it like 30% or 40%?
I have no idea what you know. Yeah. It's you know it's whatever the regular retirement formula was plus Social Security.
So you're doing okay.
I'm doing okay now. I'm doing okay. And like I said, I'm back in the good graces with my family.
Your wife, your children?
My wife, my son, my daughter, my grandchildren. I have four grandchildren in the last 3 years. I get pictures from them. I get videos from them. I go up and see them. And when I go up there, I'm part of the family. But what I want, the point I want to make right now for anyone out there who feels that life is hopeless. There's nothing to live for. I drank for 52 years and destroyed everything I had. I was hopeless. All I wanted to do was die a painless death. That was my prayer at the end to my higher power, that please let me die a painless death and one that's not embarrassing to my family.
Yeah.
And the other thing I said, Rhett, and these might be the most important words I ever said.
Yeah.
Or talking to my higher power, who happened to be God,
or,
you know, I said, or if you have a purpose for me, let me know. Not thinking at all. It's like people who buy a lottery ticket when they know they're not going to win, but they have to buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
I said this at the end of that prayer.
If you have a purpose for me.
If you have a purpose for me, let me know. And on May 11, 2016, in my brother's parking lot, near death and paralyzed, God kept me alive. I believe my God kept me alive.
Oh, yeah.
So I can be here talking with you today, sharing my message with other people, and letting anyone out there who feels hopeless and that they just want to die, there is a higher power up there that if they talk to that higher power and say, please help me, I need help.
He's there.
I got it in a certain way because I was an alcoholic. You don't have to be an addict. You don't have to be anything else.
Yeah.
Just ask.
I got a purpose for me. Here I am. Here. Surrender. It's a surrender.
It's a surrender. That's exactly it, Rhett. It's a surrender to something greater than you that created us and wants the best for us.
That's what happened to me when I had a similar experience where I wasn't drinking. I was only in my late 20s, but I was in my living room, and I always thought Jesus was foolishness, but I called out on the Lord, said, okay, I believe you died on the cross and rose from the dead, and nothing happened. I said, okay, well, I believe you died on the cross, rose from the dead, and I said, I'm a fool to live without God. You're my creator. You breathe life into my lungs. I said, I surrender the rest of my life to you, and that's when I had what you had. The heavens opened up, and I'm feeling this peace. I immediately said, oh, this is why people do drugs. Because that's the counterfeit. This is the real McCoy. And I sat down in a rocking chair and I went, wow, you're real. You're real. Wow, you know? And so, you know, things happened. And then years later, I ended up with something tragic happened in my life, the loss of my mom and a relationship. And I ended up picking up some booze, only for less than a year. Mm-hmm. But now I have 14 years where I haven't had a drink, you know. So.
And it's beautiful, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's beautiful.
Life has its ups and downs, but it's beautiful.
Who wants
to have your life all fogged up? No thanks.
Yeah.
That's not fun. You may think it's fun, but it's not fun drowning your sorrows. Face it, you know.
And that's all we're doing is covering them up.
Well, first of all, we learn from our sorrows, too. Remember, Jesus learned obedience by the things which he suffered, and also he was a man acquainted with many sorrows. I've had a lot of sorrow in my life, a lot of people dead and gone. There's nobody around for Christmas anymore, nobody. But it's, you know what? It's like, okay, but I've learned compassion, love. I think I'm a better man and still growing and becoming better all the time, right? But it's taken some sorrow to do that. And that's so no matter what you're going through, folks, God's there for you. It doesn't matter what you've done. I don't care where you've been sleeping, who you've been sleeping with, or who you haven't been sleeping with, what you've done wrong, whatever it is. God is just very forgiving. A broken and contrite heart, it is written, a broken and contrite heart he will not despise. A smoldering candle that's lost its flame, a smoldering candle he will not snuff out. You know, like you snuff out a candle with your fingers? No. God will breathe and give you life again.
And you just talked about, and it's the most important thing, okay, that eventually there is a higher power out there. I don't want people to, because you hear people all the time saying, they come into an AA room, and the word God is used some days, and some people say,
oh boy,
that's it. I don't want anything to do with this if it involves a God. Just think of it as something that's loving and caring that created you and wants the best for you and is there for you. And you just mentioned about, and I told my story about how my God came into my life and kept me alive on that hospital bed so I could be here today.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's the truth. I will talk to anyone about that. But the other thing is, and you mentioned it before, when you put up the Vero Voice magazine that showed a number to call.
Yeah.
And That's a number. That's a 772 number. However, for anyone that's listening to this, for anyone who has a family member that might need help, wherever you are, all you have to do is go on Google.
Yeah.
Go on Google and ask for whatever the county is. Indian River County, St. Lucie County, Martin County.
I think it's
and then all you have to do is AA AA Intergroup.
Here it is, AA.org.
AA.org. Or AA, if you want to direct, if you want to make a telephone call, people still do that.
Yes.
Believe it or not,
yes.
Telephone calls. If you want to, you can go on to Google and say whatever your county is. Just say we're in Indian yep. River County right now, and you want to get information on possibly getting help for any addiction you have, especially, well, Alcoholics Anonymous
yeah.
is the one. You just say whatever county, Indian River County Intergroup.
Sure.
And it'll pop up on All Google. Right. It'll give you the number. It'll give you the address and whatever else you need to at least call there and say, hey, I have some questions. Can you help me?
Thanks, Bernie, for coming on.
Thank you so
God
much.
God bless you.
Thank you so much, Rhett. This was a pleasure. I hope, as they say, I hope I helped one person out there today maybe get rid of pain in their lives.
Maybe God will breathe
and,
out and that'll happen.
And I know even if not one person got helped, I got helped by being here today
sure.
To strengthen my peace and my recovery. So
right, thanks, Bernie.
Thank you so much.
All right, this is the mayor of the airways. Who loves you, baby?